Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's April the 14th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, where he serves as the Senior Grains Analyst. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, Farm Bill conferees spent the weekend locked up together and have made some progress. An economist at USDA says the month of February was an ag export record breaker, and the CFTC has released details of its upcoming public meeting to address issues in the commodity markets. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. How concerned do you suppose a farmer should be about the wet weather so far this spring? I'll have three views from the crop production specialist right here on the Illinois campus. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley@admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at $8.96, a half cent lower for the day. July futures at $9.10.5 unchanged, and July of 09 at $9.19.5, down a half for the day. May corn futures $5.91¾, up 7.5 cents. July at $6.04¾, 7¼ higher. September corn at $6.12¼, up 6¾, and December futures, your new crop harvest month, $6.13¼. Up 9 in December 09, up 6 cents at $5.71. May soybean futures $13.72¼, up 40. July at $13.89¼, up 40 cents. And the August futures at $13.77¼, up 39¼. November soybeans $12.87, up 24½. May bean meal futures at $3.50.20, up 5.70. July at $3.54.30, up $6. May bean oil $61.50, up 156. And July at $62.25, up 156 as well. April live cattle at $89.15, up 45. June at $90.10, up 32½. And the April feeders at $99.55, up a nickel for the day. May futures at $103.75, up 2½ cents. And the April lean hogs at $58.77½, down 17½. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets did on this Monday, or doing actually still. May crude oil at $111.85, up $1.71. June futures at $110.90, up $1.19 for the day. The CRB index at 409.23, up 1.78, and the dollar at 71.85. That's down 0.04 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 12,307, now stands just about 18 points lower. Crude oil, rather gold futures, trading the April contract at $925.40, down $1.80 for the day, and the May futures at $926.40, up a rather $1.70. That April contract was up $1.80 and not down $1.80 in the gold. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region in Illinois and Indiana. Well, I don't have the forecast with me at the moment, but I will remind you that you can see that forecast online if you'd like. Just visit our website at willag.org. Hit willag.org. You can find the forecast and podcast of this program, the Closing Market Report, if you'd like. It's all right there, including our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free. You can sign up for that on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe. Dave Dickey works really hard on that newsletter. It's absolutely free. We send it out over the weekend, and if you sign up today, we'll make sure that you get that one next week. And it's all at willag.org. Here's what the forecast looks like for Champaign-Urbana tonight. Clear skies, the low of 30, the wind from the northeast at around 5 miles an hour, and then shifting to the south overnight. Tomorrow, sunny and breezy and milder in Champaign. The high 63, the wind from the south at 6 to 12 miles an hour, increasing to 12 to 24 miles an hour by late afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Time now on a Monday afternoon to take a look at what happened during the trade today in Chicago at the Board of Trade, the CME Group, the Mercantile Exchange. On the line with us from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, is their senior grains analyst. His name is Kurt Kimmel. He joins us each and every Monday. Hi, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
A lot of rain over the weekend, and it stalled, well, almost everything. And I suppose the farm fields hadn't been started, but there were a whole lot of other things that might have gone on and that weekend in April that didn't happen, did they?
Yeah, it pretty well put the damper and slowed down the weekend activities as a whole, not only farming, but other events and cookout and so forth. But forecasters are promised a little better forecast as we go through the week. A lot of them have it clear until about Friday, then some moisture this coming weekend. And the next week sort of hit and miss. They put the moisture in, take it out, put it in, take it out. But the key is this week maybe some activity can resume in some areas, but it's going to have to stay warm and dry for a while. The overall 6 to 10 day is warm and wet. The extended 11 to 15 day is warm and normal. So we're slowly working that way. This afternoon's USDA or WASDE reports expected to show the corn plantings anywhere from 2 to 4% complete in there. I believe that five-year average is 6%. But as we approach end of the month, that number moves up dramatically. So next week will sort of be more critical if we're still sitting on the sidelines.
Now, those crop production reports, of course, are due out at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Central Time. Crop weather reports from the United States Department of Agriculture. We'll try to make sure that we have something on this program and tomorrow's programming about those and where they stand. You know, when I left, I was on a few days vacation last week from Wednesday to Friday. But, boy, it sure looks like we had a pretty good up move in the soy complex. Are they just trying to buy those acres back that the 2-to-1 ratio was maybe leaning towards corn?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, started talking to producers a little bit more, and we've seen some switching back. Well, we really didn't think that would happen, but there's some fairly large tracts. The guys saw the $4 break in beans and said, the heck with this, I'm going to see if I just go ahead and get some corn back in. So I think we've bought some bean acres and lost a few corn acres. Also, too, the soybean complex has not really divorced itself from the energy complex. Crude oil started moving higher there last week, too, and it sort of brought the world vegetable oil, world palm oil values up with it. And so we'd see renewed interest in owning oil, per se. Also, too, sort of a coincidence may happen at the same time. We saw China come back into the world market. Somebody's chasing this oil market. Bean oil was up along with the world vegetable oil market overnight. Then, too, we've seen a little concern in the southern hemisphere. Weather-wise, a little too cold in Argentina, a little too wet in Brazil. Then, too, there's still uncertainty on the availability of beans coming out of the southern hemisphere if we keep hearing the word strike.
There's lots happening in Washington, D.C. this week. Farm Bill conferees are working on that. Of course, maybe more importantly to the marketplace is that the International Monetary Fund, I think the World Food Bank, the World Bank, and a couple of other places have started to gripe pretty heavily about the price of food across the globe and what impact that might have on the very poor in nations around the world, including this one, of course.
Yeah, it's a concern, you know, when you try to help the poor or misfortunate, and the cost of that task is going to go up. You know, I don't know if it's totally due just to the raw input part as far as raw corn, beans, meal, wheat, or rice or whatever. It's also being affected by higher transportation costs and insurance and salaries and other factors, too. I think you got to go back to the real Buds day when you take the price of a loaf of bread The only one slice really goes back to the raw producer back to day one, and that one slice happens to be the heel, Todd.
Indeed it does. Well, the question I suppose is that this raises is, if this really becomes an issue on the world front, and I suppose it is now, is there an impact on the marketplace at some point? Is there political action that gets taken? What might it be? Does it worry you at all, or is it just a lot of bluster out of Washington and other places?
Well, we're fortunate enough here where, until now, the cost of food's been relatively cheap. But there's already been political action taken. We saw it in Russia. We're seeing it now in Argentina, where they're putting export tax, for example. That's the big one there. Mm-hmm. We've seen it happen in China and so forth. So what happens is step one is export tax. If it becomes more serious on a larger scale, the U.S. could, I don't want to say it, you could go as far as embargo or some other issues, too, where you can sort of slow down the export of food out of countries to keep the price in check in your country, for say. Another solution as far as energy and fuel, there's talk about the import duty to ethanol into this country could be switched too. So there's several things that could happen, but the last thing we want to see is some type of embargo to keep food in our country and keep inflation down, because in past history that does not work.
At this point, are you going to tell me that the trend is higher in soybeans on the short term? I'm sure. On the long term, what about that?
Well, long term into the summer, you can look for higher prices, maybe driven by more inflation fears, weather. There's projections from Goldman Sachs and some other companies that we've got a lot more to go to the upside. On the short term scale, technically, I think we've got to watch this November bean futures. Is this $13, $13.09 area? That's sort of a objective to determine whether we're going to keep marching higher or not. If we fail to move above that, I think we can sort of back and fill. On corn futures, I think we've got to watch the $6 level. We dropped down to that there last Friday. We were down to 602 last night. We bounced off that fairly well. If we stay above $6, you can still continue to grind higher, but a move below $6 is going to probably open the door for a round of profit taking, which would put some downside risk back to that 560, 570 area time.
All right. Thanks much, Kurt. Any final word from me before I let you go?
With the roller coaster and just about anything's possible, we've been generating a lot of interest from individual producers. They're concerned about the availability to be able to market their grain through their local elevator. We're working with individuals on doing that by using futures and options. We welcome your phone call.
Thanks much.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
By the way, some free watches and warnings have been issued for tonight and Tuesday morning for central Indiana and southern sections of Illinois and Indiana. Be wary of that. Dave Dickey is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Marathon weekend talks among House and Senate Farm Bill conferees netted progress in key areas. The conference bill likely will include a scaled-back provision for the Permanent Disaster Aid Program, and agricultural tax breaks in the Senate's original bill are likely to be removed with a promise to consider them in a later piece of legislation. Also, it appears the conference bill will be about $6 billion above baseline, plus the cost of the scaled-back disaster program. The bill is also likely to contain a large increase for nutrition spending, at a minimum $9.5 billion. The bill also contains at least $4 billion for conservation, and a number of special provisions for cotton and sugar not favored by the White House likely will be in the bill. Ag committee negotiators are expected to present the new package to the full conference committee this afternoon. A USDA economist says agricultural exports topped $10 billion in February. That's a record for a one-month period. Nora Brooks says year-to-year totals are significantly higher for a number of commodities.
The largest increases registered were for wheat, which is up 147%. Dairy products are up 110%, which is mostly non-fat dry milk. Soybeans are up 64%, vegetables are up 58%, and corn is up 50%. Most of the increase for dairy products, wheat, and corn are due to both prices and volumes. Most of the increase in rice and vegetable oil is due to prices alone.
USDA is forecasting $101 billion worth of exports for fiscal year 2008, but USDA economists say that number is likely to go up when the department releases its May forecast due to strong sales in soybeans. The CFTC is holding a rare public meeting on April 22nd to discuss the futures market. Topics are expected to include price discovery, hedging, and margin levels. Market volatility and increased participation by non-agricultural investors have some saying the market no longer provides its traditional risk management function. The roundtable will consist of CFTC officials, as well as officials from USDA, the Farm Credit Administration, the Federal Reserve System, and a broad spectrum of ag groups, including producers, commodity merchandisers, financial firms, and futures exchanges. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, this week, the University of Illinois crop production specialists have taken up three potential rain delay concerns in their weekly bulletin. I'll have more from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Cutworm problems increase with planting delays. Crop producers and others involved in agriculture are keeping track of the storm fronts, dropping lots of rain onto already saturated fields. The fronts have and likely are carrying adult black cutworms into Illinois. As the females drop out, the University of Illinois Extension entomologists say the bug will seek attractive sites for laying eggs. Planting delays in the state should offer up plenty of prime spots, fields in which weeds are growing. Mike Gray and Kevin Steffi say winter annual and perennial weeds in particular will attract egg-laying black cutworm females. Consequently, as planting is delayed, black cutworm larvae will hatch and begin feeding on the weeds. And then comes the problem. As the weeds are killed, the cutworms will need additional food and will be large enough to cut corn plants as seedlings emerge from the soil. Wireworm baiting recommendations for Poncho and Cruiser. The recommended scouting approach for wireworms is to establish bait stations a few weeks prior to planting. It's common knowledge that this pest management recommendation is rarely implemented in most commercial cornfields, especially those planted to BT corn varieties. However, in many areas of Illinois, planting this season, of course, will be delayed compared with previous years. So the entomologists at the U of I say, why not grab a shovel, get rid of some nervous energy? According to the Entomological Society of America's Handbook of Corn Insects, the following procedure should be used in setting up bait stations. Establish stations 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time. Target fields with a history of grass. Consider 5 to 10 stations. Bait stations should be 2 to 3 inches deep, 6 to 9 inches wide. Within each soil depression, place 1/2 cup of an equal mix of untreated corn and wheat seeds and replace the soil. Place a sheet of black plastic directly over the mounded area, then overlay a sheet of clear plastic on top of the entire baited area. Secure the plastic with loose soil and flag each station. Prior to planting, check each bait station for wireworms. As few as one wireworm per bait station indicates a potential economic infestation. And finally today, how much nitrogen have I lost? The short answer to that question from the corn farmer, says University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger, is, for the time being, concerns about nitrogen losses are limited. You can read more complete details by searching Google for University of Illinois Bulletin. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Now it's a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason, and we're not joined this afternoon by the folks at the Andersons. One good reason is that they changed their phone number on me, and, well, I installed a new operating system on my computer over the weekend and forgot to update their number in it. So I've got the wrong phone number for them and couldn't find the right one right off the top of my head. Checked in with Paul Cooley, but he's out of the office at this point, so you're stuck with me and maybe what the forecast looks like for this two-state region. Don't forget that in just a couple of minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. We will be joined by the folks up at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, for a complete look at that. That'll happen in, well, just about 3 minutes. Now, here's what the forecast for the two-state region looks like this afternoon. Taking a look at the numbers, mostly sunny. The high of 52, says our own Mike Sola. The wind from the north at 5 to 10 miles an hour. This for Champaign-Urbana, the forecast. Tonight it'll be clear, low around 30. The winds from the northeast at around 5 miles an hour, shifting to the south overnight. Tomorrow, sunny, breezy, milder, the high of 63. The wind from the south at 6 to 12 miles an hour and increasing to 12 to 24 miles an hour during the afternoon. Tuesday night, to be clear, lows will be around 43. Wednesday, Mike says, mostly sunny skies in Champaign-Urbana, windy and warmer, the high near 70. And Wednesday night, it'll become partly cloudy, the low around 50. Thursday, partly to mostly cloudy. On Thursday, the high will be about 72. Partly to mostly cloudy and 72. Sure sounds like spring. Hope things dry out and you can get in the field. You're listening to the Closing Market Report in 2 minutes. We'll return when we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is refusing to disclose details about the people he's pardoned from their criminal pasts. The Chicago Sun-Times has requested access to the files of 69 pardons. The governor's prisoner review board responded that it would be an unwarranted invasion of privacy. But the newspaper reported that Blagojevich allowed access to executive clemency files in 2003, shortly after former Governor George Ryan cleared death row by commuting sentences. Blagojevich has been criticized in recent months for two pardons of people with political connections. The head of an Illinois hospital board is worried that being mentioned day after day in a government corruption trial will give people the wrong idea about the board. Two former members of the Illinois Health Facilities Planning Board have been accused of misconduct. Their actions are part of the federal case against Antoine Tony Rezko, who faces federal fraud charges. Current Chairwoman Susanna Lopatka says whatever happened was before an overhaul in 2004 that replaced everyone on the board. Lopatka says she's heartsick that people might see the headlines and think that nothing has changed. The planning board makes decisions on whether hospitals can expand. Champaign County board members tomorrow night will begin mulling through long-term options for paying for its financially strapped nursing home. Two county board members on each side of the political aisle say it's too early to consider privatizing the facility, although Republican Greg Knott and Democrat Pius Weibel have different suggestions as to where the board should look to make up for cuts in state Medicaid funding. And Chicago Mayor Richard Daley says he'd welcome an extra chance to make a pitch for Chicago before the International Olympic Committee as they decide which city will host the 2016 Summer Games. The IOC's executive board says finalist cities will be able to explain their bids to members a few months before next year's final vote. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Marker Report. I'm Todd Gleason on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time now to take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather. Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago joined us. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Tell me about warmer weather, I hope, during the midweek.
Yeah, we have one more night of chilly temperatures here across the Midwest before warmer temperatures start to move into the region as we get southerly flow and the cold air that's been through the region recently starts to push out to the east. So that in conjunction with a bit of a drier window here is certainly favorable for corn fieldwork preparation and planting over the next couple days before our next precipitation producer moves into the region late Thursday into Friday.
Well, maybe as long as they can get out across some of those fields, some of them will be saturated. And what they'll need to know is that there's very little precip in the next one, or is it bigger than that?
Well, it looks like the zone's setting up right now from southern Missouri into western Illinois. So that's your area of heaviest precip. It looks like Iowa stays rather dry in this next event. And then further east into eastern Illinois and western Indiana, you see lower totals too. But that swath from southern Missouri up through, say, western Illinois, 1 inch, generally speaking, in some isolated areas of up to 2 inches. So I think Missouri is definitely a trouble spot given all the rain they've had, and they seem to be in the area of heavier precip, albeit the totals are less than we've seen certainly over the past couple weeks' worth of events. But still, it's a prolongation of wet conditions.
If you had to make an estimate for Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Illinois, and I know Illinois is an awfully long state from one end to the other, Indiana, how soon might you think producers would be able to move into the fields?
Oh, that's a great question. Obviously, the timing on this event coming up in what areas get the precip is certainly important. Past that, you get another open period for several days into the middle portion next week, and then you have an event that moves to the Dakotas into the areas of Iowa, Minnesota, et cetera. So let's talk Iowa, Minnesota. That area, you probably have a good 7 to 9 days open before you get wet. And then once you change to a wetter pattern in the middle to end of next week, you look like you may stay there for a while. So northern belt looks good for the next week to 10 days. And once you have this event that moves through Thursday, Friday across the Midwest, Illinois, Missouri, you get a good another 3-4 day break at least until the next precip event moves across. So it's like 3 to 4 days, and then you have an event, 3 to 4 days, another event.
I guess that's as good as we're going to get at this point. Anything we ought to be reporting from other parts of the globe?
Things are rather quiet. We did have a good amount of rainfall in southern Brazil in the past 2 days that has led to maybe some potential harvest delays, but nothing of severe note. And things in China look great for the summer crop planting and growth coming up. So overall, things are rather quiet. The U.S. is the main highlight globally at this point.
Josh, we appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Josh Darr. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. And Josh, along with a whole crew of folks, to join us to take a look. Let's take a look at the agricultural weather. At this time of day during the Closing Marker Report, including some notable folks, those from Chesapeake Energy, John Davis and Josh Darr and company there, along with Drew Lerner, who airs on Wednesday on the station. Pete Levitt, noted meteorologist out of Massachusetts, joins us on Thursdays. And, of course, Don Day is on Tuesday. And then the own folks from right here on campus at the Illinois State Water Survey and the Midwestern Regional Climate Center join us on Fridays. That's Steve Hilberg, of course. That's a look at the day's closing market report. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good afternoon.